You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
John, here we are again. Back talking to more, you know, video game developers and professionals in the industry. It's always exciting.
Oh, definitely exciting. Mm-hmm.
And our special guest this week is Daniel Mullins, the developer behind Pony Island, probably one of the most popular independent games from last year. And of course, we both have had experience playing that game.
Yeah, and it's definitely an experience.
Yeah, and Daniel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and if we just kind of want to get right into it, I mean, from the beginning, you know, from the onset, did you just want to create like a crazy bonkers game?
Yeah, I think so. I think the feeling I really wanted to capture was this kind of like unfolding creepy thing that you like could keep digging into and it just kept going deeper and darker. I really liked, I always said like one of the games that influenced it, maybe even more subconsciously, was this game Motherlode. That was an old web browser game where you started off like this kind of mining game where you're in this drilling tank that drills down into Mars, and you start to dig deeper, and a game that didn't appear to have any major story starts to unfold as a story, as like the guy who's giving you instructions actually turns out to be the devil. And then when you get down to like the core of Mars, there's like a mecha Satan waiting for you that you fight. And I just thought that was really cool when I was younger. And I think that like that feeling of kind of digging into something and finding way more than you expected down there was something that guided me, I think.
Well, you certainly achieved that with Pony Island. I mean, from the onset, it's like going to be a... first of all, I thought I'm going to play as the pony for most of it, because I really hadn't heard much about the game previously before like kind of playing with it like a couple of months ago, and I was just so taken aback by how weird and unique it was. But trying to just kind of going off of what you were saying about that one other game, I mean, what was kind of the other inspiration influences for Pony Island?
I guess I never really like dug super deep into Frog Fractions, but I played it kind of just briefly to check it out when it was when the hype was all around it, and that I thought was extremely cool. Just how bold that was to have this hidden game tucked inside this like innocuous package called Frog Fractions, and again, like, I wasn't really thinking about Frog Fractions that much when I was developing it, but probably like unconsciously, how cool I thought that was made its way in different ways.
Have you gotten the opportunity to play the newest edition of Frog Fractions? I know that came out not too long ago.
No, I actually haven't played it, but I watched most of a Let's Play of it, which I guess is a little bit not getting the full experience, but sometimes when a game comes out where I think I can learn a lot from it, I'm so anxious to just see what it's about that I want to quickly watch it before I bother to sit down and play it. And then I kind of end up not playing it after I watch it.
It's funny that you actually bring up Let's Plays. I mean, that's how I kind of first discovered Pony Island, where I think it was, Markiplier, I believe, like one of those guys playing it. And it was just, I was like, what is this? And I was just so interested in getting it, and I quickly found it on Steam, and I was like, wow, this is just so unique and weird. I mean, have you kind of been, happy to see that the Let's Play community has, like, continued to play the game?
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Like, I always imagined that you get a big boost at the beginning, I mean, which is true, but I never expected, months or even a year after the game came out to still be seeing that stuff. So that's pretty awesome, and that's probably the main reason why it's had such success.
Yeah, I think that is because we've mentioned how kind of weird and strange it gets. It's one of those things that you can see it, but you also at the same time want to experience it for yourself and kind of feel those weird transitions. But yeah, going off the influences and just your time in developing the game, what was your philosophy, you know, coming into it?
What do you mean, like, philosophy?
In terms of, like, gameplay. Like, what did you want to do with gameplay?
That's interesting, because a lot of the time, like, the gameplay is, like, this annoying thing that I have to have. Like, I think I always have, like, ideas of how it feels and, like, the mood and, like, what happens, kind of, like, what happens at this moment. And then I have to kind of think about how I can support building toward that moment and have interesting gameplay to get you there. So I think it was always, like, the first thought was always, like, the creepy mood and, like, making you certain feelings that I wanted you to have, like, this feeling of, like, you're kind of, like, stumbling through this and you're never quite sure what's going to happen next, and you're never quite sure what effects your actions are going to have. Like, in all the code puzzles, those were kind of inspired by just this feeling of actually being in code and not knowing exactly what's going to happen when you write a certain line or what will happen if I delete that line. So, like, feelings like that I was going for. And then I guess the philosophy of gameplay was just, like, how can I somehow have traditional gameplay to keep someone engaged to get to those feelings and those moments. So, yeah, I guess gameplay was just this thing I had to have, and I was always trying to think of contrived ways to stick it in.
I will say, I mean, you made coding fun for me, because I've always struggled with that.
that was something I wanted to speak on. I thought it was very interesting as I was playing it. You know, maybe some of the other subject matter is a little darker for kids, but at the same time, I thought, someone who's never coded before, this is could be their first taste at what that feels like, to see a problem and sort of, you know, you're just missing a piece here and missing a piece there. I don't know if that's an unexpected outcome for you, but is that something you would like to push to get more people interested in what you do?
I think, like, that's great. I think people learning to program is good, and I think it helps them understand, even if they don't end up making software, it helps them be more literate when it comes to software and understanding, oh, like, why might not this program be working for me, and maybe it'll help them use it better. So I think that people learning to code is a good thing. I don't think that it's something I want to pursue more, like, as a goal. Like, I'm glad if that's an outcome of my work, but I think I'm more interested in, like, entertainment and just eliciting emotions than maybe teaching.
I was kind of curious, what was kind of the development process like for the game? Because it was primarily you, and I think, like, one other designer as well, Simon Jenkins.
Yep.
And I know, of course,
yes,
you also had a composer, too.
Yeah, so Simon is a good friend of mine, and he basically, near the beginning of the development, like, when I wasn't sure if I was even going to make the full game, I was looking for publishers. I was trying to get, like, some validation, I guess, to push forward, and I found a publisher, and they said, like, okay, like, this idea looks interesting. At the time, I only had, like, this 5-minute game jam game. And the publisher said, like, this could be cool, but, like, how are you going to make this into, like, a feature-length game? And, like, how are you going to flesh this out? And that was, like, I had the same questions. So I was, and they said, okay, well, we might publish you, but, like, we want to see a 30-minute demo. So I had to scramble that demo together, and like I said, I had these ideas about, like, what I wanted the player to feel and what the atmosphere and mood would be like, but I had, like, very little idea about what the gameplay would actually be. And, like, so Simon came in as a friend of mine. He works in the game industry as a designer, and he came in to help me design this, like, 30-minute demo. And past that, he kind of got busy with work, and he stepped back once I was kind of rolling and off to the races with it and had an idea of what I was actually making. And then, so the other person that helped me was Jonas Senzel, and he did the music in the game, and now he's taking an even bigger role in the Hex, and he's doing the music and the sound effects. So the development of Pony Island was really mostly just me. I would ask Jonah for specific music tracks, and Simon helped me with that 30-minute demo and then stepped off after that.
I got to slide in the quick plug, because I'm kind of the music guy between me and Chris, but I saw that the soundtrack is on vinyl recently.
Yeah, yeah.
It's super minimal, but you're right. It helps elicit that mood that I think you were trying to set, especially like in the third act of the game, when things are getting glitchier and glitchier. It's just like, oh my gosh, this track is seeping into my mind, and it really made the game. It helped elevate the gameplay to make it even darker and more twisted, even
that's great.
To a point where I kind of felt unsettled.
Well, that's that's exactly what I wanted.
But into your development process, I believe you were a programmer before in the games industry. What made you take that leap, and what were some of the bigger challenges going fully indie and making your own game like this?
Yeah, so I was making games as like a hobby pretty early on in my life. Like, I think when I learned how to use Flash when I was about 13 or 14, I started making like really, really basic stuff, and I always loved that. And then I guess that was when I got used to the process of like, I can actually make the art however shitty it looks, and I can do it all myself. And like, that was something that I always loved to do. And then when I got into the games industry as a programmer, I always knew that it would have been like this, but I guess it became fully cemented the fact that when you're a programmer at a company, that's all you are to them. They're nice to you and they respect you, but you're a programmer and that's your job, and the designers don't really want to hear what you think the game should be like, and the artists don't need help. So that wasn't really fulfilling to me to be just a cog in the machine. And then I think with the first company I was at, that was not as much of a problem, but then the second company I was at, it was a great place to work, but I just felt like I was just a small cog in a machine, and I felt like I would be happier doing something else.
Sure, of course. And what's it been like to see kind of just the positive reaction to the game, and I guess the critical acclaim as well? Because Pony Island is reviewed very well on a number of websites. Yeah. And
I don't know, pretty surreal. Like, it's just like after a few like big things, like, oh, it got like a 9 on IGN, and then like the PewDiePie video and stuff, and then all like you start to get almost numb to it. It's really weird. Like when you get blasted with it all at once, and then it slowly trickles off after that big blast, you're kind of just like, whoa. And it just like, yeah, I don't know. It's strange.
What are your feelings, I guess, going off of that, going into your second game now? Your name is out there. People, you know, want to talk to you. You're known as the guy who made Pony Island. You have something to your name. So what is the mindset going into Hex?
I was struggling with that. Like, I right after Pony Island, the first thing I did was add some extra languages, so I didn't get going on another game right away. But then I started on a game that I dropped, and I think what I learned from that is I was really anxious when I was starting to make that about, like, how is it going to be better than Pony Island, and, how is it going to compare to Pony Island? And I was doing a lot of planning and, like, making notes and stuff, which is not something I did for Pony Island. Like, I think naturally I just go and I come up with ideas along the way, but I felt this pressure that I had to pre-plan and get it all right. And then I think I dropped that one because I just had a bad relationship with it. And then I guess I tried with the Hex to be more relaxed and try to less compare it to Pony Island and just see where it goes. And I think that's helped me get further with the Hex. So I'm trying to accept the fact that it might not be as successful, maybe sales-wise or review-wise, as Pony Island, and just try to do the best I can and see where it goes, and just try to, as much as possible, have a mindset of not trying to compare it.
I did notice something else when I was like just kind of looking at your Twitter and going off of like this in-between stage for you. You are also still involved in game jams and stuff.
Yeah, and I still am. I just did one last weekend, and that's just something I really like to do. And I think, I mean, you probably know that Pony Island started as a game jam, so who knows when I'm going to stumble upon something that I think will be worth carrying forward. So it has, a practical advantage, and I also just enjoy doing it.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Does it help you just stay in that creative mindset, or Are you like you said, are you doing it for fun or also looking to gain inspiration?
Yeah, probably both. And it's a good break from doing a long-term project, like, because things move slower with a long-term project. I have to think about if I write code that it's really clean and that in the future I'm going to be able to modify it. And I have to just be always thinking long-term. And it's nice to just drop all that for a weekend and do something messy and fast. It's just a relief.
I just kind of want to briefly get back to the hex for a minute. Could you kind of go into more of a better description for the game to people who may be unfamiliar with it?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I don't expect many people to be familiar with it because it's not out. The way I was pitching it at South by Southwest is kind of, it's like a mystery game is the setup, I guess. The setup is that there's these six characters in this old inn, and there's this old bartender who kind of is a narrator, and he gets a phone call that someone in the inn is planning a murder, and he doesn't know who it is because there's a storm outside and the phone cuts out dramatically, and then basically that's when you take over control of the game when you find this out, and each of the characters is a video game character, and it's kind of exists in this Wreck-It Ralph-esque video game universe where these characters play a role in games almost like actors play a role in movies, but maybe a little more involved. So each of the characters is kind of like a game protagonist stereotype, but all kind of like, they've all kind of been like twisted, or they're like jaded or washed up. There's like, for instance, a platformer character who's kind of like a washed up Sonic the Hedgehog, kind of like Justin Bieber, kind of like had success when they were younger and now is kind of like burnt out. And there's like a fighting game character, a space marine, and so on. There's six of them.
I mean, that's what I kind of really, that's why I gravitated towards that South By when I first saw the game. And one, of course, you know, you're advertising as the creator of Pony Island, of course. But when I saw it, I thought, this is such a cool idea. It actually reminds me of that old PS3 commercial where it's like all these video game characters would gather at like a bar or whatever, for, like for Michael.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Was that? I don't know if that was maybe something that could have inspired you for something. You know,
No, I haven't seen that, but maybe I did. But I don't remember. But
it was just. I was just like, oh wow, it's like that, and I always wanted to play a game like that where it's like it's mixing all these different genres and you know, and all these kind of weird characters, or as you call, you know, describe them like these washed out characters. But I think it's really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, was this your way of kind of playing with all different types of genres with the Hex?
Yeah, I think so. Well, actually, strangely enough, the idea of the six characters in the tavern came first, which was because I saw the movie The Hateful Eight, and this was when I was working on the game I mentioned that I worked on for about a month, and then I dropped it, and then when I saw The Hateful Eight, I was just, like, thinking that night, like, I really liked that movie, and I really liked the tensions between the characters and the constantly changing power dynamics and all these, like, twists and reveals, and I thought, like, how could I possibly make that into a game, because I think that was so cool, and then I thought, okay, well, like, you'd have the same setup where the characters are stuck together in a confined place, but then I thought, well, what if the, because it's a video game, what if they're video game characters, and then kind of the rest floated from that, and I guess what I missed in my pitch that I just said is that a big chunk, the majority of the game, you're playing through the memories of the six characters, and each of those memories is a different game genre. So you're actually playing a platformer for the platformer character's memory, and then you play a fighting game, and then there's a Japanese RPG, and then so on.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I was wondering, that goes up, it makes me think of two different questions. One, out of not necessarily those characters, but those genres, is there one that you just gravitate towards naturally as a player? And is it the same one that you gravitate towards as a developer now having, you know, tried your hand at dabbling into those genres?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's some that I don't gravitate toward. Like, for instance, the fighter one, like, it made sense to have a fighting game character because I think that's just such an established genre, but that's something I've never gotten deeply into. So that might have made that part harder. And then as far as games I gravitate toward, maybe they're not as much represented, because I tend to play, like, narrative games like Firewatch and something that's doing something novel in the way it delivers story. Mm-hmm. Or that's what I find most interesting. And I think my game as a whole is attempting to do that, but maybe not each of these little pieces as much.
I was also wondering, you know, looking at Pony Island and now the Hex and how you're kind of playing and talking meta about the games industry and what makes makes it up. I was just kind of wondering, having been in the industry and now, especially now on your own, what are your general feelings about how the industry has progressed and what is kind of shown the spotlight and even this growth of the indie movement as it's just gotten bigger over time? I was just wondering what your general feelings are towards the industry.
I think the indie scene is growing and becoming more and more impressive and exciting. I think every year there's new amazing stuff. Like, my Twitter feed is just full of like just indie developers and showing GIFs of their games, and every day I go on, I'm just like, wow, like there's just some amazing stuff being made. I think in terms of like the broader scene though, with like of triple A games and like how gaming is perceived by the public, I think we're a little bit, I think indies are maybe a little bit ahead of the curve. I think that some of the way that people see gaming is the triple A games, and I think those are kind of lacking in creativity a little bit. It's just like the way people see games is kind of what some might call murder simulators. Like, they just always imagine like the big shooter or like the Assassin's Creed, and like that's a little disappointing, because sometimes when I'm talking to people who don't know anything about games, and I say I'm a game developer, I'm sometimes a little bit embarrassed if I think that that's what they think games are. Like, oh, I just make the latest like shooter game. And I play those games too, but I wish that more people saw the really creative stuff that's going on.
You know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because, you know, I mean, John and I, we're not involved in the games industry in terms of like development, but obviously talking about games, reviewing them, playing them. And, you know, we've been doing this for probably close to a year now, and we're actually craving kind of these smaller, you know, more intimate experiences with the games now.
Yeah,
where these long form stuff, like, you know, these RPGs that are filled with like filler, it's just like it's too much. Like we've just been playing Owlboy this past week. We actually had one of the developers on, and just to play that, and I got this sense of just warmth from the game, and I just love this experience
that
they crafted.
I got that too. I didn't get as far, but yeah.
I think what is unique about the scene is you can feel, I've talked to Chris about this off mic before, that in the old days of the industry, it seemed like they tried to place, you know, these kind of stars, the Cliff Bleszinski, the David Jaffes. And I think now what they were trying to do, it's coming through more, because stuff like Pony Island, it feels like this is something that could come from a Daniel Mullins. Like, and then from looking at Owlboy, this is very much Simon's project. And I think that's, that creativity is starting to come through a lot more in these interesting stories. And I have to actually say too, I think sort of, Dana, you hinted at, you know, the visual sort of novels and stuff. I don't think games like Danganronpa could have existed 20 years ago and have gotten the sort of press coverage that they've starting to get. So I think the indie movement is slowly, it is way ahead of the curve, but it's slowly starting to seep in, because you guys are making waves and starting to get a lot of people's attention.
For sure, yeah. And I think also the tools available are a huge driving factor, just how Unity keeps getting better and keeps getting more affordable. That really helps a lot.
You know, I just have like one final question, you know, for people who are interested in getting into kind of independent game development. I mean, what advice would you give them? What could they expect, you know, and the hardships going into it?
Yeah, well, I usually say the same thing for advice, is that, like, dip your toe in the water before you dive in. Like, if you haven't made a game before all the way to completion, it's not the time to quit your job and try it. Like, you should be a little assured of your skills, I think, before you take any financial risks. And I think a good way to do that, to dip your toe in, is to do game jams. And if you force yourself to see a game all the way through in a weekend, you're getting like a pretty good like taste of what it's like to actually spend a month on it, or a year on it. So that's what I'd say for advice. And then I guess the difficulty is just, well, it's just a lot of competition, and everyone has the tools, and some people have been doing it for longer than you, and they're going to have more talent, frankly, because I think talent develops over time with lots of practice. So I think one thing people overlook is that you have to practice to make something really good. Like, you have to make a lot of games in your own time before you take that big step to make a huge project that you're going to take a risk on.
Yeah. Well, you've clearly figured it out, you know, with Pony Island, of course, your upcoming project right now. And of course, this is the most important part of the interview and the podcast is where you sell all your stuff to our listeners. So, where can people find Pony Island?
On Steam, basically. Just search Pony Island on Steam or search Pony Island Steam into Google.
Awesome. And when can we expect to see the Hex?
Yeah, so I'm hoping near the end of 2018 near the end of 2017. and if it comes to if I'm still doing the last touches in December, then I might just push it to January 2018. So around that time area.
Awesome. And how can people follow you and keep up to date with all your stuff and all your projects?
Yeah, so I think definitely Twitter would be the way to go with that. And my handle is @DMullinsGames. Or if you search Pony Island Twitter, I'm guessing you might find me, or Daniel Mullins Twitter.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you so much for speaking with us, Daniel. That was awesome.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
We're going to keep playing Pony Island, and we can't wait to play the Hex very soon.
Well, thank you.